Just a quick note, on this particular episode, my audio was really, really quiet, so I've had to play around with it. And I'm not the best sound engineer in the world. So this episode and next episode, there might be a few little audio ups and downs and different volumes that may be there. So apologies for that, but hopefully you'll still get the benefit of the content. Bye now.
It applies certainly as an entrepreneur or employee. And let's just do a really quick basic example. Let's suppose you get a little bit better at negotiating. And we're not talking about being the world's greatest negotiator. We're talking about being a little better than you are. So imagine if you're going for a job and you get a job offer for 70,000 pounds. But instead of taking it as it is, you negotiate. So you do a quick call or a few emails. It'll take about 5 minutes and you negotiate for 71,000 pounds. 1,000 quid more, that is not a huge lift. We can all imagine doing that. If you're 30 years old and you do this negotiation and you do nothing else in your career, if you sit in that same job for 30 years, 5 minutes of negotiating just got you 1,000 pounds more for the next 30 years, you just got 30,000 pounds. Right? That's amazing.
Hi, and welcome to the Sunday Lunch Project Manager podcast for Sunday, the 16th of October, 2022. This is your host, Nigel Creaser. And this week, we've got Mark Hirschberg, the Career Toolkit Guy. So what's been going on the last couple of weeks? So the last time I recorded one, it was my little one's 11th birthday. So it's been birthday parties and all manner of stuff like to do that with birthdays. So that's been excellent. I've had a business trip, which again, unusual these days for me. It was a two-night stay as well. So that, again, was quite a new experience, which is great, up to the lovely city of Newcastle in the United Kingdom and Newcastle on Tyne, which really like that city. It's great fun. I also had a training course with a company called, and I just stepped away from the mic then, so apologies, a company called Churchill Square Training and Development on strategic thinking, which was a really good course. Really enjoyed it. Learned a lot, found some things that I was doing, found some things I wasn't doing, and maybe it just changed my view on looking forward on strategic thinking and how, in some ways, there's a layer of strategic where you have an organizational strategy, and this is what I took out of it, part of it. You have a departmental strategy, you have a team strategy, maybe, and you have your own strategy as well. And depending on where you are and what you're doing, we all need to apply strategic thinking. Otherwise, we're just looking at our feet and doing what's the next thing that comes out. We had a lot of great analogies there. And my favorite, which came from a different team, but I love it, was to be more meerkat. And in our jobs, instead of sitting and looking at what's here in front of us, and you look at a meerkat team, they've got some of them looking out and getting on jobs, but popping their heads up and looking around for danger or opportunities. And sometimes we don't do that. And in projects, I can find that sometimes we're dealing with that firefighting, getting us to the next milestone, getting us to the next release or something like that. And actually, sometimes slowing down, stepping back, looking ahead, can actually remove some of those future ones. It's hard to do when you're in the middle of a fire to be able to look away and stop the next fire. But I do find sometimes that we get in a cycle of firefighting and it just feels normal. And it's so much better to be in that scenario where you can look ahead, think about that. And even if it's taking a slot every week and every month where you absolutely dedicate yourself to thinking about what's happening in the future, whatever that horizon is for you, that will make us better managers, better project managers, better employees as well, because we may even spot things the organization hasn't spotted, because sometimes when we're down in the weeds, we see more than the the higher ups who've got that 30,000 feet view. So I thought I'd share that today because I think it's interesting. What else is going on? We've got half term coming up. Next month, we're coming up on my 1 year anniversary of Project Manager Productivity Hacks. I am going to do a sale. Now, if there is anyone out there who hasn't bought it and looking at the sales number, I'm sure there's a few. What I'm going to do, I'm going to make the digital one 99 pence. So the ebook will be 99 pence on the 1st of November. And what I'm trying to do is do what I've seen some of my guests do, which is choose a time, get a bunch of people who are interested in buying it at that discounted price to get it up the charts within the Amazon charts and see if we can get a bit of traction this year. Should have done it last year, but too late. Can't go back in time. Haven't built a time machine yet. That project's still on hold. So I will put out details on social media, etc. But between 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. GMT, if you guys can jump on, and if you haven't got a copy of the book, it's 99 pence. I think it's worth 99 pence, personally. Other people I've spoken to have said so. So they've said it's more than that, but you know what I mean. So there'll be a link in the show notes, or jump onto the website and you'll be able to grab a copy of it. Other things that have been going on, quite a few preparatory conversations with new guests coming on down in the next few weeks. I finished off one interview with Lucy Harrison, who has written the book Soft Skills for Tough Jobs. Again, I stepped away from the mic then. Sorry, guys. Which is a really fascinating view. And I think us as project managers, soft skills, as they're referred to, they're not soft, are they? They're key to what we need to do. So, really looking forward to being able to share that interview with you in a few months. So that's it, really. I'll let you listen to my chat with Mark and catch up again. Cheers now. Bye. Today, I'd like to welcome Mark Hirschberg to the show. Mark is the author of The Career Toolkit, Essential Skills for Success That No One Has Taught You. From tracking criminals and terrorists on the dark web to creating marketplaces and new authentication systems, Mark has spent his career launching and developing new ventures at startups and Fortune 500s and in academia. He helped start the Undergraduate Practice Opportunities Program, dubbed MIT's Career Success Accelerator, where he teaches annually. At MIT, he received a BS in physics, a BS in electrical engineering and computer science, and an MA in electrical engineering and computer science, focusing on cryptography. And at Harvard Business School, he's helped create a platform used to teach finance at the prominent business schools. And he also works for a number of many nonprofits currently serving on the board of Plant a Million Corals. So, Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Tell us a little bit more about you then. Where are you? People will guess your sort of vague region of where you are from your voice.
I'm in New York City, but I don't have a New York accent because I moved around a lot as a kid.
To me, you have a bit of a New York accent, but then I'm not very good at picking out the accents.
Yeah, to a real New Yorker, this is nothing like a New York accent.
Yeah. You're talking the Queen's English to a real New Yorker.
Exactly.
Brilliant. And what about you and family and what are you doing in the moment?
Sure. Have two great parents, wonderful brother-in-law, and their kids, who I love to see when I get the chance. So just to give some context for all the things I do and how we got here, I have this really interesting dual career. I started out, when I graduated MIT, started as a software engineer during the dot-com era, started doing startups. And I realized early on, I enjoyed coding, but I wanted some of the people challenges that came with managing people. And I realized I wanted to become a CTO, Chief Technology Officer. But I also realized that to become that wasn't just about being a good engineer. There were a whole bunch of other skills, project management skills, certainly, but also people skills, leadership, communications, team building, negotiating, No one ever taught me these skills. So I had to learn them on my own. As I was doing so, I realized these skills are not just for senior people. They're not just for the executive team. They are for everyone at all levels down to individual contributors. And so I wanted to upskill my team. I began to build material and train up my team. As I was doing so, MIT had been doing research and found these are the skills that companies want universally. Regardless of industry or role, they want people with these skills, but they're not being taught. So that's where we created the program at MIT. I was fortunate to be invited to help create some of the content and then to stay and teach. So for the past 20 some years, in addition to all those startups and Fortune 500s I've been working with, I've also been teaching at MIT and knew we wanted to reach a bigger audience. So I turned it into the book, The Career Toolkit. And so now I'm a fractional CTO, but I'm also a speaker and author and do some other things related to the book.
Brilliant. Brilliant. So it's a little bit of a portfolio career that seems to be quite common these days. And we're all trying to, quite a few people trying to get that situation, isn't it?
Yes. More and more common, especially post-pandemic.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everyone kind of, while they were, I know my brother's a great example, actually. My brother is a motorcycle mechanic and it was at the luxury end of the Harley Davidsons. And he was furloughed. And then he started getting involved in doing things to do with 3D printing, which he was messing around with as a bit of a hobby. And other people I know just completely changed careers during that pandemic. So I imagine that the need for these toolkits for people's careers, if you start working on your own, setting yourself up as an entrepreneur, those skills come into immediate effect, especially if you start employing people. But even so, it's a lot of those skills you talk about are they're really valuable everywhere, but it's a massive focus when you start as an entrepreneur as well.
It applies certainly as an entrepreneur or employee. And let's just do a really quick basic example. Let's suppose you get a little bit better at negotiating. And we're not talking about being the world's greatest negotiator. We're just talking about being a little better than you are. So imagine if you're going for a job and you get a job offer for £70,000. But instead of taking it as it is, you negotiate. So you do a quick call or a few emails, will take about 5 minutes, and you negotiate for £71,000. 1,000 quid more, that is not a huge lift. We can all imagine doing that. If you're 30 years old and you do this negotiation and you do nothing else in your career, if you sit in that same job for 30 years, 5 minutes of negotiating just got you £1,000 more for the next 30 years, you just got £30,000. Right? That's amazing.
Yeah.
But of course, you're saying, wait a second, I'm not going to stay in a job for 30 years. And you're not. You're going to have other jobs and raises and promotions. And you're going to negotiate for more than just £1,000. And there will be other things you negotiate for as well. By learning to be better at negotiating, you can add tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars, of pounds, to your lifetime earnings. Now, this is an example that we're doing for the same skills apply if you're an entrepreneur. Now you are negotiating with your suppliers, with your customers, with your partners. In fact, as an employee, guess what? You're not just negotiating salary, you negotiate other things too. So by learning to get better at negotiating, whether you are an employee or an entrepreneur and getting just a little bit better, you can have this massive ROI throughout your career. Now the secret is it's not just negotiating. Certainly, we can do the math and say, oh, £1,000, 30 years, here's how it works out. But if you get a little bit better at leading, at communicating, at team building, at networking, at any of these skills, you're going to get the same compounding effect that is going to carry you forward and bring you more success throughout your career. So all of these skills, as an entrepreneur or employee, it is worth investing in them today.
Yeah, it's a fantastic example there. I think it reminds me of some of the conversations I've had with people about leveraging their time and about by improving your own personal productivity. And that's what, I can't remember which way I'm pointing, my book there, improving your productivity there. if you just reduce interruptions, if you just reduce the amount of email you do, and you cut down 30 minutes a day of unproductive time or less productive time, and then you use that either for your own personal break or get home early or whatever, or you channel that into your career, that it's compound interest, isn't it? It's that kind of thing. Is it's you save that 30 minutes, but because you're doing better with that, you've identify other ways to save or leverage that time to generate more, and then it snowballs, doesn't it?
And yes, that's exactly that sort of right.
Yeah.
So that's why we all want to invest in these skills.
Yeah. It's and I think it's the phrase that a lot of people use, and it's historically has been the soft skills, isn't it, for these sort of things?
Yeah, they're often called soft skills. Some people call them power skills lately. We've called them firm skills for a couple of years, but no matter what you call them, their value is critical.
Yeah, and I kind of see them as the basics. If you think about it, you could be an amazing engineer, you could be an amazing coder, you could be an amazing whatever hard skill as people refer to in your job. But if you don't get on with the people in your organization, as you say, if you don't know how to negotiate to get more time even for a piece of work that you're doing, your those basics aren't there for you to build that platform of skills on, isn't it?
That's exactly right. Let's do another analogy. We're going to do a little bit of basic math here. Imagine I give you a rectangle that's 4 by 10, and I want you to increase one of the sides by 2 units to maximize the area. So which side do you increase, the 4 or the 10? And feel free to pause if you need a moment to think about it, pause before you come back. But now that you're back, you've of course said, okay, I want to go from 4 to 6 to give me 60 instead of 48 the other way. Okay, yeah, great. What does this have to do with anything we're talking about? Conceptually, what's happening when you put the 2 units on the short side, those 2 units get amplified by the long side, or we are amplifying the long side by those extra units. If you think about, all of us have long sides and short sides, more than 2, but let's just use 2 for the moment. So imagine in your example, you are that great engineer. That side is really long, but you are a terrible communicator. So your short side is really short. You are a long, thin rectangle without a lot of area. And so you might have great ideas, but if you can't communicate them well to other people, the ideas don't go very far. You don't generate a lot of value. By improving your communication, by getting a little better, your overall area increases and you're much more effective. We're not talking about getting up on the TED stage before the world. Yeah. We're talking about just being a little easier to understand or writing more concise emails or whatever your need is. Now, obviously, we still need to work on our long sides, particularly those of us in engineering. The technologies I use today didn't exist 10 years ago. If I don't pay attention, I become a dinosaur. But on a per unit basis, the best ROI is working on these short sides, working on these fundamental skills, as you point out. That's going to get us the best return. So certainly, whether you're an accountant or project manager or engineer, whatever you do, it's mostly project managers here. Yeah, keep focusing on that, but also invest on your short sides. And that's where you're going to get a great return.
That's a fantastic idea. I like that visualization of it. And it draws me to, I'm sure you've seen these. You remember these spider diagrams you'd get with different skills where you'd have, you start at the middle is 0 and the top end's 10. And I suppose if you think your engineering's at 10, and that does the same thing, doesn't it? As it spreads out, the whole total area that you're covering is more, because it kind of indicates that leverage as well, doesn't it, in those sort of things. I've never thought of them like that before, if it calculated that sort of thing. I think it's because the other thing that I've heard advice on, and I agree with, is that you have to be careful, and I think you alluded to it with the skills that maybe aren't your strengths, about not taking them and trying to bring yourself to a 10 on everything, because there's elements that, like I said, the fundamentals, you need to be a certain level there, then these build on it. But sometimes people look at this and I've got to be a 10 on everything. So they spend loads of time and effort on their real weakness. Whereas actually, as you say, that keeping up to date and keeping their main skill current and their secondary skills current and their secondary and the tertiary ones up to date, those where your main focus should be. But if your skills are really below average or below a level on these other type of skills, that's where you really can, as you say, you get that super leverage from it.
Exactly. I was a competitive ballroom dancer. I even went to England a few times for some competitions.
Did you go to Blackpool by any chance?
What's that?
Did you go to Blackpool by any chance?
I did not go to Blackpool. I've had a number of friends who have gone. It was always my dream to go, even though I would not have made it past the first round. But maybe one day I'll go at least watch because I don't compete anymore.
For those who don't know Blackpool, it is called the Vegas of the North in the UK, it's referred to. And I'm not quite sure it's comparable to Vegas, but it's got a big ballroom there.
And the ballroom competition, that is our version of the Olympics. That is almost bigger than the World Championships. It's kind of the premier event. When I started doing ballroom dancing, within a few months, I already looked fantastic. Now, compared to people who had been training for 20 years, no, but compared to the average person or the person who maybe took a few lessons, few months of training already, I was far ahead of them. And so very quickly, I got better. Now, there were marginal returns. I did become one of the top dancers in the US, but to reach number one, the return for the amount of time started to get very expensive. To get into the top 1,000, okay, top 100, yes. Get into top 10, took quite a bit of work. To go from top 10 to number one, just a lot of work. And it wasn't necessarily worth that return on investment. It wasn't worth my time to push and be number one. I will never be the best negotiator in the world, but I am a very good negotiator and I have fantastic engineering skills. And there's very few people who have that unique combination. I might very well be the best negotiator among engineers, certainly among cryptographers, which is my subspecialty. So when you start to recognize these combinations, there is value there. And it's not like you're going up head to head against every negotiator in the world. You're negotiating against other people in your industry, in your ecosystem. You just have to be good enough to do well in that pool.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. Again, there's a podcast called Manager Tools, which I seem to mention every week on this podcast. So, and it seems every time I talk to someone, it's something relevant to it. They talk about that. It's the parable that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. It's that kind of thing of musicians are the ones I think find it as well. People who are musicians. My wife is a really good pianist, but she compares herself to her teacher and brilliant pianists and amazing pianists. And to a non-piano player, I can mess around and make a noise on it. To a non-piano player, there's sheets of music with dots on, and she reads it and plays it, and I'm like, I can't understand it. And most people sit there and wouldn't even be able to fathom out what to do. And that's the same thing, isn't it? It's about being, but if you try to be the best at everything, you're going to fail. So you need to be the best at the right things. And as you say, if you didn't want to be number one ballroom dancer, well, yeah, those marginal gains as you get to those top ends in any skill become lots of effort. And lots of hard work on that. I remember I was reading something about motorcycles quite a few years ago in a magazine where they're talking about performance enhancements on your bike on a track day. And they put on different exhausts, they put on different fairings, they put on different lightweight wheels, all different rubber, all the different things on it. And for each one, they recorded how fast, how much it added to the lap with a pro riding around. And I don't know if they did a compounded one where they did all of them and then saw what would was. But basically they did all that, but they were getting really small marginal gains. And then they talked about the fact that actually if you lost half a stone, you get more power to weight ratio gains and you'd be quicker by losing half a stone rather than spending 20 grand on kit. And it's kind of that bang for your buck, the return on investment is looking at what you need to do to actually achieve what you want, isn't it?
Exactly. When you look at retirement savings, certainly here in the US, we have to put in our own retirement savings and you put it in the market and you watch it compound. The difference between annual returns of 6% versus 7%, 1% difference, but over 20, 30 years,
massive.
That is hundreds of thousands of dollars, could even be millions of dollars. And so it's getting those small little improvements. They seem small, but as we've said, compounding makes a huge difference. So all of these, and that's one of the key things when you read a book like mine, this is not the final word. You know, I don't have every little detail on each of these topics. I put 10 topics into the book, but my job is to take you from below average or average to above average, not number one in the world, but above average. If you get just above average in all these skills, the impact is going to be huge.
Brilliant. So you mentioned the 10 topics there. What are the ones that you cover in there? Do you want to just talk about them or just give a taste of it? Obviously, negotiating.
There are, it is. There are 10 topics in 3 sections. And these are the skills that in studies done by MIT and other universities, we found corporations, companies want, not just in the US, not just for recent college grads, not just for engineers, but universally, this is what they want. Section 1, careers. Chapter 1, how to create and execute a career plan. We all know we need project plans at work. Why do we not have career plans? Because I can tell you our careers go much longer out than any of our projects. Chapter 2, working effectively. Things like managing your manager, understanding corporate culture. Chapter 3, interviewing. Now, not as a candidate. There's plenty of content out there of, oh, how do you answer this interview question? But we all have to hire. And most of us received zero training in how to interview someone. So we go through that process, how to be intentional with your interviews and hiring. Second section, leadership and management, leadership skills, and then management, I break down people management and process management. Process management piece is probably going to be the least interesting for this group because you've been focusing on it. And then the last section, interpersonal dynamics, communication, networking, negotiations, and ethics. And the way the book is written, there's a brief introduction of a couple pages, and I say, go in whatever direction you want. It's like a choose your own adventure book. You don't have to read it in order. You might say, hey, I want to get better at negotiating. I want to get those 1,000 quid more today. How do I do that? Go right to chapter 9, read that. Then go back to chapter 3, learn how to interview people better. Then maybe jump to chapter 4, working our leadership. You can do them in any order. It's a toolkit. Pick up the tool when you need it.
Cool, brilliant. So look, thinking about that, when you talk about executing a career plan, I find it really interesting. And as you say, with project managers, we're used to managing. We're used to thinking about what's this piece of work? It may be 6 months, 12 months, maybe a couple of years for some of the longer ones, some of the construction projects, maybe even if you start looking at some of the nuclear stuff, the decommissioning stuff, you start getting many years, but you know what I mean? There is, we do look at that. We do plan it. And is it, do you see from your experience in the conversation that actually that career, the end goal of a career for someone isn't necessarily something that many of us have? Because that's the thing with a project. You've got an outcome that you're aiming at, isn't it? And maybe it's just talking to me, but my main goal is to come to work, enjoy my career. Maybe it's not, maybe it's because me, I don't know, but it isn't necessarily, I've got this firm view of where I want my career to end up. And as we talked before about the kind of portfolio careers that are around these days, it's some of it is a little bit about not where I'm going to get to, but that journey of there. But I suppose the plan's useful for that as well.
That's a great question. Let's first look at if you do have a clear destination, and then we'll understand that and go to your broader question. Now, for some people, there's a destination. I want this title. I want this much money. I want a job where I can only have to work 3 days a week. whatever it is, you have your goal. I want to manage a team of 1,000 people. Doesn't matter what it is, you have some goal. Now, the irony is that all of us know for our projects, if we were told, here is your project, here's your objective, hit this in 2 years, we'd say, okay, well, I better create a plan. I better have a roadmap. I better have check-ins. I better see how I'm doing. For our careers, if I want to be in this job in 10 years, do you have any plan whatsoever? And the answer for most people is no. Well, if you can't manage a 2-year project without a plan, how the heck are you going to do a 10-year project? You're crossing your fingers and hoping, and that is the antithesis of who we are as project managers. Now, in the book, I go into a lot more details, but certainly, at the very least, take some of your basic project management tools and techniques and apply them to create your career. In fact, here's something very simple you can do right now. I'm going to have you pause the podcast, only if you promise to come back. You're going to pause it. You're going to open up the calendar app on your phone and create a calendar event that says, think about my career, and set that as a recurring event every 6 months. And when you do that, you've already just put in a basic checkpoint, just like on our projects, whether it's a 2-week sprint or whether it's a quarterly check-in, we're gonna do the same thing with our careers.
Yeah.
So you can start with those techniques and you get more advanced. Now, the question is, what if there's no, I need this title, I need this dollar amount? What if it's something like happiness? And hey, that is a valid career goal. My goal is to maximize my happiness at work. In fact, I personally, that pretty much is one of my goals. I want to be happy. It's not about making the most money I can make. It's about enjoying myself. Well, still, what is enjoyable may change over time, and that's fine. Because the thing about our career plans, just like our project plans, they're not set in stone. We know, first, we're not going to follow them to the letter. But we also know things change, goalposts change. I work with a lot of startups and we say, oh, this is a product we're going to build and we're starting out today and 5 years from now, this is where we want to be. At some point along the way, we usually pivot and do something else. And that's fine. We say, oh, wait, better opportunity. We think we want to do this instead of that. Okay, great. Let's do it. Throw out the old plans, come up with new ones. The same thing is true for our life. So whatever your goals are, and by the way, your goals themselves might change over time. When you're 20, it might be, I want to build my network. I want to learn a lot about this industry, and I don't mind working 80-hour weeks. Yeah. When you're 40, you might say, I want to be home with my family. You might say, I just need this much to survive, whereas at 25, you thought, I want to buy 17 vacation homes. So it's okay to change your mind and adjust your plans accordingly. So I think it's important to have a destination. Now, destination might be a title, or it might be maximize happiness or work the least amount of hours, whatever it is. And then we want to work towards that, knowing that goal can adjust.
That makes sense. Yeah, it really does. Yeah, I think I've seen things where, it's obviously, funny, I've got a poster up here from a thing called Ikigai, which the Japanese concept meaning a reason for being. And it kind of sits there where you have doing something you love, doing something you're good at, doing something what the world needs is doing something you can get paid for. And it's a Venn diagram. And the middle of it is the Ikigai, where you've kind of got those sweet spots of all four. And sometimes it's nice to be able to try and think, well, how can I find that thing? And that might be the part of the goal, isn't it? It's kind of right. Okay, these are the things I like. How can I turn something I'm good at, love, and the world needs into making money? Because it may not make money. And I suppose if you think about it, there's probably quite a few people these days that are able to do those things through something that they like doing, they're good at, and that the world needs it, but it can quite often be a philanthropic exercise that people would end up doing. But being able to turn into some kind of media type thing, whether it be entertainment, whether it be education, whether it be just TV or whatever, that can end up creating someone something that they can be paid well for as well. And whereas probably a few of these things, you wouldn't have been able to do it. It's like Mother Teresa was starting now kind of thing. She'd definitely have an Instagram account, wouldn't she? You know what I mean? Yes, she would have sponsors. it's maybe I'm being a bit flippant there, but it is that whole concept of thinking about where, and I think where you get the different intersections, you get a mission, a passion, a profession, or a vocation. And sometimes it depending on how old you are and what your personal circumstances are, you may be right. I want my profession, or I have a mission, or I have a passion, and quite often you can see those things that people have got. They'll be there just on a mission for like looking after people because it's what they love doing, and the world likes it. So it's kind of, I can see how thinking about that is so useful, because I've gone through looking at my own career to try and decide what I want to do, what I want to be. Sometimes it goes back to some of the things I wanted to do when I was younger. I started as, it's an interesting one, actually. I went to college to do business studies. My brain was that I wanted to be on the stock exchange. I was a kid of the 80s, yeah. Lunches for wimps, a Porsche and a mobile phone, smart suit, living in London, doing something like that was where my brain was. And coming from a small country town in the north of England, I didn't end up doing that. But I was interested, so I decided to do business studies. And I was going from school, and a guy I knew was training to be an accountant as part of his. He was doing A-level accountancy and all that. And I thought, "Well, yeah, how are you doing that for?" And I didn't realise really what I was talking about. That sounds boring. Roll forward 10 years. I'd been doing accountancy for 10 years because I'd moved from doing business studies. It's got a role training as an accountant, did training in that. And then I moved into project management through IT, basically. And it's quite interesting how that goal, some of my goals when I was younger were there, but my subsequent goals weren't moving into project management because that's where I want to go. I want to go and do that. It was an opportunity. I took it. And I suppose quite often a lot of us have that with our careers where we only take the opportunities rather than creating them, until you're a bit older when you start thinking about, am I happy? Like me in my 50s, midlife crisis land, it's kind of, is what I'm doing what I really want to do? Is what I'm doing giving me satisfaction? Is it giving me... because it rewards me okay. It's just that, is it giving me all the things that I want out of life? And it isn't all the time. Sometimes, and I think your career isn't always going to give you everything that you need. If your career is the only thing that, if it's the only thing that satisfies you, then you're kind of stuck because you need something else as well, don't you? So I hope you enjoyed that first part of that interview with Mark. And next week, we'll have the second part. So look after yourself. Cheers now. Wow, you made it this far. I'm guessing that you enjoyed the show, if you have. Or maybe you've just left it playing in the background and forgot it was on. But if you did enjoy it, and you're inclined to, I'd be delighted if you could share the show with your colleagues. It's discoverability with podcasts is quite difficult, especially with a niche one like this. But sharing with your colleagues and letting them have a chance to listen to these fantastic guests would be brilliant. If you've got time, a review on whatever platform you listen to it on would be great too, especially if it's a 5-star one. Again, that makes it easier for people to discover the show when they're searching on there, because comments raise it up the old search engine, up some optimization on all the different tools. If you are feeling flush, I have a couple of ways you could contribute. One is Patreon, patreon.com/SundayLunchPM, and you could donate some money to the podcast that way, or you can jump along to my website, nigelcreaser.com, www.nigelcreaser.com, and click on the link to the shop. And in there, you've got all my books that I've created in the varying different guises, a number of different ways you can grab a copy of those. And down the bottom, I've got the my guests' books. So everyone who's been on here, if they've had a book, I've got a link to their book in there. And Amazon give me a little bit back for when someone buys from them. But more importantly, if you come back next time and listen, I'll be delighted. So I'll leave you alone and let you get on with your day now. Thank you. Bye.
Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.